right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. It is I, your host, Pizza Mind, and I'm flying solo today, and but not by myself, because I have the beautiful and talented Maria Gomez, the managing director from one of my favorite groups in all of the crypto space, the Interchain Foundation. Maria, welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast.
Thank you so much, Pizza Mind, for inviting me here.
Well, I couldn't have asked for a better tag team partner while we're on the podcast today, because there's so much to be excited about in the Cosmos ecosystem. And it's been a little while since we've had someone on to kind of talk about it. So if you would, first, let's get to know you. What were you doing before you joined the Interchain Foundation? And what was it about the Interchain Foundation that attracted you there?
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
Yeah. Before the Interchain Foundation, I was working in a project in Ethereum that was building tools for DAOs. The project was called Aragon. And my background is in law. I used to be a corporate lawyer. So when I started working in crypto through Coinbase, that was my first work in within crypto, coming from the traditional world. And I started learning about Ethereum and like the DAO project. I was very interested about DAOs and what they were and how different they were from traditional organizations. So yeah, before coming to Cosmos and to the Interchain and the foundation, I was very involved in DAOs and for me, my world was mainly Ethereum and the Ethereum ecosystem. And I knew some things about other ecosystems like Cosmos. However, at the moment that the opportunity came to join the foundation, there was a lot of conversations and discussions around the future of Ethereum and the scalability of Ethereum. This was like more or less 2 years ago. 2 years and a half ago, about the scalability of Ethereum and like their change to POS. And then I started like looking at other ecosystems that were already having that. And for me, I was like, yeah, it looks like Cosmos is going to be the future of Ethereum, and Cosmos is already, the things that I was seeing that they were going to move towards, those things were already being applied in the Cosmos ecosystem. So for me, that was interesting enough to join the foundation. Yeah.
There's so many interesting things going on there. What is the role of the Interchain Foundation within the Cosmos ecosystem?
Yes. So we are one of the entities that we are focusing on the funding of public goods. So we have a stack, and we call it the Interchain stack. Previously, the Cosmos stack. We are trying to change more to talk about the Interchain rather than Cosmos. So we have this Interchain stack, which is a set of tools and technologies that people can use to set up their own blockchains. And those set of tools are like the IBC protocol or the inter-blockchain communication protocol, then the Cosmos SDK and the consensus engine, which is Comet BFT, previously known as Tendermint. So we make sure that those public goods, they don't have a business model and they will always be free and open source. They keep running and they keep evolving. And so that's our main mission, making sure that this stack is innovative and is well maintained so the Cosmos ecosystem can flourish.
And I think it's really cool how you've built that out in such a modular way, where someone can have a Cosmos chain, but they don't have to have it IBC connected, or they don't have to use the Tendermint algorithm. They can have proof of work if they want to, or anything else that makes them comfortable, but they can still be part of this much larger ecosystem. So I've been very, very impressed with all the different groups that are contributing to Cosmos over there. Now, but let's talk about DAOs. At a high level, what makes a DAO different from a normal LLC or C Corp?
Well, through my years of experience working with the DAO tooling, and at the beginning, like Aragon was launched like around 2017, even before DAOs were so hot as they are right now. My learning was that a real DAO is a real decentralized and autonomous organization, and right now people don't really know what's decentralized and what's autonomous, what that really means. And a lot of the entities that are being called DAOs are not different than any. There are actually, most of them are legal entities, so there is no difference whatsoever. And some of them are not even incorporated. So they are just, a sort of unincorporated organization that sometimes don't even use the smart contracts to operate. Like I say that currently DAOs are having a huge identity crisis, and this is very problematic because it's very risky for people, that they join a DAO or what is called a DAO with an understanding that things are transparent and open and trust minimized. And in reality, that's not what is happening. But and so for me, to go back to your question, decentralized autonomous organizations are totally different than legal entities. First, they are the autonomous. That means that they are self-regulated. They are trust minimized. The trust is based on the system or the encoded rules, open and open source, that open source rules that these systems have. And also there are not strict extrinsic powers that can control these systems. That's what it means to be autonomous. And then they are decentralized, meaning that these individual powers of any group or any person or any jurisdiction are really minimized, among a sea of contributors, among a sea of participants. Nobody there really control the full picture. You really can interact with those DAOs according to the encoded rules. There is no one person that can control that system. So for me, a DAO is like something like the Ethereum blockchain, or a DAO is a really decentralized protocol on top of the Ethereum blockchain. That's what for me is a DAO, and they are not like a legal entity. Is an incorporated entity that has to be attached to specific rules in certain jurisdictions, and these entities need to follow those rules that are set up by people. In the difference with a DAO would be that the rules in these systems are software.
Okay. So what is the right use case to form a DAO over a legal entity? I mean, I know there's not every organization is big enough where they need to incorporate or doing as important things where they need to have an EIN number here in the States or a bank account. Can we operate as a DAO, or will some government jurisdictions view that as doing business illegally? What have you seen so far in being in the DAO space for like five years plus now?
So I always say it depends on like what is it that you're trying to do, and if you are trying to do set up an automated system like a blockchain, for example, or a specific protocol, and if that is really going to be decentralized, yes, you don't have to incorporate that thing as an entity. However, it, you know, like you are contributing to that system, and it's good that if, like if you are, for example, part of the team of the developers that are setting up that blockchain, it's better for you to incorporate. But you have to make a difference between what is it that you are incorporating, if is the organization under which this group of humans are going to be working for that DAO that they are building, or that protocol or that blockchain that they are building. So if what you are doing is just forming an organization full of humans to collectively go and buy a house, go and buy a golf thing, like, you know, there are now a lot of like social DAOs called social DAOs, and they are just a bunch of humans using a multisig. So if these are the cases where you see that technology is not going to play a big role within that entity that you want to or system that you want to organize, you should incorporate. You should incorporate technologies front and center of DAOs and front and center of a system like the blockchain. If you go and see other type of what people call DAOs are just, they can use a multisig, and that's a piece of technology, but they use that just to keep their funds, which are tokens, and then their main activities are always like off chain. You know, they set up a group to go and buy certain tokens or buy certain a house or a land to build a golf course or something like that. You know, that that's in this. In those cases, you should incorporate.
Got it. So what kind of tools out there are there to serve DAOs right now? Because it's very, very difficult to run any kind of business without the right kind of tools and software. Is it just a multi-sig wallet, or are there other things as well, like analytics and hiring platforms, accounting, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So for me, as I said, for me, one thing is this really decentralized and autonomous organization, like the blockchain or a protocol. And then there are other entities that they, that they can contribute to these systems, to these blockchains. And we are seeing it already. These are the ones that are wrongly called DAOs. However, what I believe is that these entities are legal entities that can be used, is not only multisigs, but they can use smart contracts. They can also be governed at some point by the blockchain system or the token holders themselves, for example. So they can set up a foundation where the multisig is the tool for holding the assets of the foundation. However, for example, the token holders can decide through a connection with that multisig and the blockchain, they can decide who are the signers of that multisig, and they also can even keep the multisigners accountable. So I think that there are a lot of tools, starting with the smart contracts itself, that can make these entities, which are not a DAO because they are just a legal entity, but can be very innovative as well, because they will call, there is a lawyer that call them a cybernetic entities or cybernetic organizations or borgs. They can also have their operations automated, for example, and they will be contributing to this system through many ways, hiring the developers that one of the group of the developers that are maintaining and developing the software of that blockchain, and it's the things that you can, the tools that you can use for those automated or like more technological entities are unlimited.
One of the features of DAOs is voting with different tokens, and you have an on-chain record of what the vote was. It's transparent. But is that vote enforceable on-chain with code, where You could transfer ownership automatically through these smart contracts if that's how it's voted, or do you still need human recognition of the vote and willingness to hand over some of these things? For example, we saw in 2017, Tezos, which is a smart contract platform that really pioneered on-chain governance, their entire treasury was basically held hostage by one of their founders for several years, and they had to go through all kinds of lawsuits just to get them to, you know, give it over, because they were basically creating a solution for a problem that they themselves had, which was the irony of the whole thing. Where is it at today? Not necessarily Tezos, but just in general.
Yeah, no, I think today in general, you can have on-chain enforcement, and that's a very good thing, because you don't have to go to the traditional legal system to enforce any decision. However, I know that like also the blockchains and the systems right now are very limited. So there are certain things that you could automate, like for example, they vote on the upgrade of the system itself, right? Like a software upgrade of the system itself. That can be, once a vote passes, that can like immediately be enforced. Today we have the blockchains and the different toolings have that capability. However, there are other cases where the automation is not about the tooling, if it is possible or not. It's about if that makes sense or not. And I think one of the biggest example for that is like, for example, when the community or the token holders are voting for a grants program, you know, it's very difficult to automate decisions like what team to fund or whatnot. This is still very human. There are activities around these blockchain ecosystems that are still very human, and like it's important for humans to participate rather than automate those things, because they are very subjective, you know, like, and you cannot, it's very difficult to set up objective rules around like allocations of funds, for example. So yeah, so I think today you can have a automated enforcement, but sometimes it's best not to have that automated enforcement. Another thing is that, as I was saying, you can have a foundation, legal entity, and certain parts of that foundation can interact with the blockchain and also can be influenced or directed by the token holders. Like I said, like a foundation that has a multisig and their funds are, even though the foundation manages the funds, the token holders keep these people accountable, the signers of that multisig accountable. And the thing is that, yes, you can do that through like, totally on chain and say that like if the participant do something that specific, I don't know, move beyond a certain threshold, for example, and move assets beyond a certain threshold without following the specific processes, then through a vote, the token holders could change those signers or like leave those signers out of that multisig. However, in terms of like if something things happen, if some other things happen and the community was not like aware of those things and they could not act before those facts, then I think it's also useful to have some legal system in place. Like, for example, there are jurisdictions that are starting to recognize blockchains. And so you can say, you can put in the bylaws of that foundation that the multisig is, you know, that the ultimate directors of that multisig are these token holders, and that multisig is just a set of code that is deployed in this blockchain address. And so already certain jurisdictions, of course not many, are recognizing those things. So it's also good to have certain protection, legal protection, whenever humans are involved.
Can a DAO have a legally enforced contract, or is it still this kind of ethereal creation that's not really recognized?
Because for me, DAOs are truly blockchains or protocols are more close to a machine or to a computer than to a corporation like the ones that we know today. It's best that DAOs don't have, you know, I see these systems as an illegal thing. And it's not because of our revolutionary thing, your legal system doesn't apply to us and whatnot. It's just because there is no need. And we have examples of systems or like jurisdiction recognizing that there is no way for them to come and try to regulate that system or control that system. For example, you have seen the SEC saying that, you know, like the Bitcoin is not a security. They don't try to regulate that blockchain. They don't try to regulate the Ethereum blockchain either. They consider those things truly decentralized. There is no one group that they could regulate. They couldn't go and like try to, they can't regulate. And like, you know, the people that are contributing to the blockchain, to the Bitcoin blockchain and that are based in the US, but beyond that, they can't do much. So I think, saying that a blockchain has a legal enforceable contract, it doesn't make sense. There is no need for that. And also it's like there are two different systems that they can complement each other. However, we shouldn't confuse them. Mm-hmm. And this is why I say currently there is this DAO identity problem that, people are, depending who you are talking to, for a specific person, a DAO is one thing, and for another, a DAO is another thing.
Yeah, it's hard to get our head out of the traditional mindset of an organization. You know, when I'm thinking of, okay, I want to start a DAO and I want to have a team under me, you know, I better come up with an employment contract, or, you know, I better have articles of incorporation if I need to get on an exchange because they're going to ask for it. Mm-hmm. But a DAO wouldn't have any of those things, would it? Yeah. So how do you like literally join a DAO? Like, do I need to like send someone an invite code and they log in with their wallet? Like, what is the actual step-by-step process of joining a DAO?
You just have to follow the rules of that DAO. So for example, back to the biggest examples for me, which is the Bitcoin blockchain or the Ethereum blockchain. If you want to push some code, you have to follow the rules of that system. And of course, I mean, I imagine that also, you should join some of the core teams that have the power to push code to the system and upgrade the system and change the rules. However, this group of developers, they per se, on their own, they cannot change the rules. You know, in Bitcoin, miners have to accept those things, and also the nodes that run the blockchain as well. So yeah, it's like for you to participate in a DAO, you should be following the encoded, the software rules that are public and knowledgeable by everybody, that can be publicly auditable and in open source. And so as soon as you do that, you can become a core developer, you can become a miner, you can run nodes for the blockchain, you know, in proof of stake, you can be a validator following the rules of that system. That's how you participate in the DAOs.
Got it. So if we're thinking like a decentralized exchange, for example, they're pretty much the same, whether it's Uniswap or PancakeSwap on BNB chain or Osmosis on Cosmos. You know them all. They're 99% the same features. Are all DAO tool suites the same, just on different chains, or is one more robust than another? Where should we start looking if we want to start researching and getting our hands on actual DAO tools?
That depends. Like you said that you put as an example the DEX. Depending on what is it that you're looking for example, Uniswap is a good example of, for me, it's another DAO, even if a lot of people criticize that, yes, there is decentralized. A decentralized system doesn't mean that there is not centralized participants, right? And so, but the thing is, for it to be decentralized, it means that these centralized participants, they might have control over a piece of the picture. They don't have control of the whole picture. So, in terms of Uniswap, I think the protocol, every time that they want to, they need to upgrade the system, come with a new version of the protocol, they have to deploy a total new version, and the community has to, like, the previous version, the community can still use it. It's like, is this social consensus the one that define, like, what's the latest version and the version that they understand and identify as the Uniswap protocol? And so, yeah, on tooling, I think right now for these systems, it's like, mainly the smart contracts and in Cosmos is, you know, like I said, we don't have a smart contracts in Cosmos, but there are other tools, like I said, like our stack. And, but in terms of like a tooling for entities to interact with them, right now in Cosmos, there is something called DAO. So it offers a lot of toolings for the connection between blockchain and then this entities that are in the periphery, contributing to the DAOs. And so, yeah, I think right now, not, I have to say there are not a lot of DAO toolings, or toolings for these entities. I think the most things that we have are like payment solutions, which at the end of the day are multi-sigs and like, yeah, automated payments. For example, to pay, there is a DeFi protocol. I think right now I can't remember the name in Ethereum. Where what happens is that there is out of the inflation of the token, there is part of that inflation goes to a multisig, and then the token holders that they decide to allocate allocate funds. For example, to pay the developers that are developing the protocol, and those payments are automated according to also certain rules that the contributors need to follow. They need to go and present certain proof that they have deployed some code and they have worked, and then the payout will go almost automatically.
That sounds like an amazing system. I'll have to look it up and find out what that is. There's so many things that seem just to be built on.
Coordinate is the name of that.
Coordinate,
exactly.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, there's so many things that are built by Ethereum on default, but the Ethereum blockchain is so bogged down already. It's got most of the DeFi. It's got most of the NFTs. It's going to have most of the real world assets that are being minted now. This thing's going to be really, really heavy as we get into the next bull run. What are some of the things we should look to offload to the Cosmos ecosystem instead? Is there enough stablecoin liquidity for DeFi to come over? Or, you know, what should we really look into? What are some of the bright spots of Cosmos?
The brightest spot in Cosmos is the IBC protocol. And is the inter-blockchain communication protocol. The thing is, in Ethereum, all these L2s, in rollups, they are chains. You know, they are just another chain. Currently, there are systems for these chains to communicate with layer one. And in the case of the Ethereum blockchain, but there are no systems to for these L2s to talk to each other, and that's a that's a huge problem. And I think even in Ethereum, they are starting to see that there is need for that communication. And so I think the brightest spot in Cosmos is that we have solved already for that problem. And however, right now I have to say, in order for people to use IBC alone, it's like IBC right now is somehow tightly coupled with the Cosmos SDK. However, we are also in the process of looking at ways to not for the system not to be so coupled, and like for people to be able to use IBC even if they don't use something like the Cosmos SDK. So yeah, this is the liquidity among these chains are really going to be very, very important.
Give us the latest update on what was the biggest topic of the year in the Cosmos community, and that was the vote for interchain security and the potential change in the big inflation of the Atom token. Where are things at with that today?
Well, things are I think you are talking about Atom 2.0, that proposal. That's something that makes me very, very happy about. Like, it's a really something to show off, for several reasons. Even though if that proposal didn't pass, and I'm one of the persons that believe that the technology describing that proposal was amazing. It's amazing. The ideas describing that proposal were amazing and are amazing. Even though it didn't pass, it shows how the hub is decentralized, in the sense of like many people that were employed by the ICF, they were working also on that paper. A lot of us wanted for that paper to pass, but it didn't happen. You know, we don't control that blockchain. We are just an entity that funds the open source technology. And the validators, they really, it was a good example of participation, governance participation. Normally governance participation is very low, but here the validators, they really, and token holders, they really did the homework of reading that proposal and pointing the problems with that proposal. And I believe one of the main problems were like that a lot of different ideas were proposed at once in the same paper. And so even though it didn't pass, what we have today is that different teams, independent teams, are working on different parts of that proposal, and they are going to come and present those proposals to the community again independently. And I think at the end, the Atom 2.0 is going to be a reality. It's just that not everything at once is going to happen. And the community and different teams are organizing around like all the different ideas that were packed in that proposal.
That's great to hear. It was such an amazing proposal that other teams are now trying to copy it throughout the crypto ecosystem. So I think when that happens, you're really on to something. So hopefully these teams continue to build that stuff out and the community will accept it. What were some of the problems that people weren't comfortable with at first that are probably going to be modified before things get re-proposed?
The thing that I more or less already mentioned, which is it were like a lot of things proposed in one huge.
It was just too much at one time.
It was, people were like, this is too much. This is too much. You should have presented. They were telling the people that contributed to that proposal that they should have presented like focalized proposals instead of like try to bundle everything at once. It was too much for everybody. And I actually kind of agree with that, because there are some of those ideas are very experimental. And so to do everything at once, it could be complicated as well. Yes. And the community needs to feel safe and comfortable to support experiments. And so I think for them, for the community in general, and these were the things that we heard the most, was that it was just too much. All at once.
There was a lot packed in there. Exactly. I'm the kind of person that loves massive progress and change overnight. So I thought it was great, but I could definitely see how any amount of change is scary. And that amount can be very, very scary for a lot of people. But it's great to know that these proposals are not dead. They're just getting chopped up, repackaged, and hopefully a little bit easier to digest in the future. I'm a huge believer in the Cosmos ecosystem. Now and especially going forward. So I'm very grateful to the Interchain Foundation and all the other major contributors going on to make this thing possible. It's my biggest regret that I won't be able to attend Cosmoverse this year in Istanbul. Yeah. I was around for last year in Medellin and just had the time of my life. Yeah. Where should people go to learn more about what's happening at the Interchain, the Cosmos community. If people are, you know, finally sick of Ethereum after the latest curve hack and they need a change, where should they go to get started in the Cosmos community?
Yeah, they can go to our website, interchain.io, but also they can follow several Twitter handles in Twitter. They can follow at Cosmos or as at Cosmos Hub as well, or the at interchain.io on Twitter. In order to go and learn. In our website, we have links to the blog, links to different documentation about all the different parts of the stacks that we're funding.
Fantastic. Well, maybe you can give a couple shout-outs to some of the big contributors and personalities in the Cosmos space that have really made it what it is today that people may not know unless they're already involved.
Yeah. It's like several people, several teams that are working on developing the different parts of the stacks. For example, Informal, which is they are maintaining and developing Comet BFT. This is the main thing that they do for the ICF. And this team is co-founded by Ethan Buchman, one of the co-founders of the Cosmos project. Then also a team called Binary Builders. They are the ones, the maintainers of the Cosmos SDK. And then our own team, our internal team, the IBC team, the maintainers and the ones that are developing the IBC protocol and the Go implementation. I think, and also like, yeah, several. I think the good thing about Cosmos is that there are not like one central figure. That has good and bad things, but the good things are that it's like, you know, if people are interested about this and are keen to contribute, it's very easy. It's very easy to get involved, to reach out. People are very approachable. I would say you go to the documentation, go to the Discord channel as well. Everybody is very approachable.
That's awesome. And lastly, if this is the first podcast someone was listening to who wanted to get into the space, who wanted to start a DAO, you know, wants to participate in the future of technology, finance, organization, what's a couple words of wisdom that you'd like to leave with them?
That don't think it's too late. It's 2023. I think we are really, really at the beginning of these things. To be curious, you know, and not to be afraid of knocking doors. People in crypto, I have to say, I love both ecosystem, Ethereum and Cosmos. People in crypto are very approachable. Don't be afraid to ask dumb, quote unquote, questions. You know, we are all learning. Also, don't get into, if you're not an engineer and if you're not technical, don't think that you cannot contribute. You cannot imagine how much good people with good operational and strategical skills are needed here. You know, people that can bring all these amazing ideas that we have in crypto into reality. Don't be afraid and be curious.
That's a great piece of advice. Be curious, because when you lose your curiosity, that's when you become an adult and that's when you start getting old. So exactly. Always be curious. And Maria, thank you so much for spending the last half hour plus with us. We can't wait to have you back. And thank you again for everything you're doing over there at Interchain.
Thanks to you.
And thank you to all of our listeners to tuning into the Crypto 101 podcast for another awesome episode. We'll see you again next week.
Save big this holiday season, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Then get a flavorful Kroger spiral sliced ham for 89 cents a pound with an additional $25 purchase. Limit two, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.